7, currently fair skies, temperature of 44 degrees at our studios on East Wausau Avenue in Wausau. I'm Chad Holmes, and it is the Friday, the Good Friday edition of the Chad Holmes Show here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Coming up on the program in about, 7.5 minutes or so, we'll be joined by State Representative Katrina Shanklin of Stevens Point, one of the, I think, up-and-coming Democrats in the state legislature. We'll be talking about her budget priorities as we continue the budget process with some meetings around the state. Also, we'll talk about a couple of water quality bills that are gaining momentum in the state legislature that she's working on. So, Katrina Shanklin coming up at 2:15 here on today's program. And then coming up in hour number two at 3:15, we'll be talking, as we do every week, some Wisconsin sports. Packers, Badgers, Bucks, Brewers. Talk about it and a whole bunch more with Paul Micklick coming up at 3:15 as we wrap up another week here on the Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230. As I said, not a bad day, 44 degrees out there. Seeing some sunshine during the course of the day. Some clouds have moved in, but one more dose of a little bit of winter. And then it looks as though finally a big, big, big dose of spring coming up starting on Easter Sunday. But the National Weather Service has just issued a winter weather advisory in effect from 9 o'clock this evening until 9 o'clock Saturday morning. And it's been issued for Marathon County along with Portage County, Menominee County, Shawano County, and Waupaca County, including here, the city of Wausau, also Stevens Point, Plover, Shawano, Clintonville to the east. But a winter weather advisory in effect from 9 p.m. tonight till 9 a.m. tomorrow. We're expecting some snow. Yeah! So much snow! And it's April the 7th, and we're getting more snow. I hope, and I'm not going to guarantee it, but I hope this is the final significant dose of snow that we get until sometime in October, November. But what we're expecting are total snow accumulations between 2 and 5 inches with isolated amounts of up to 6 to 8 inches possible. Some ice accumulations of around a light glaze possible as the snow ends as well. So snowing, slippery road conditions, especially on untreated or secondary roads, rapidly changing visibility over short distances as well. And this snow will be falling in a very narrow strip. Therefore, amounts will vary greatly across short distances north and south. The area most likely to be impacted, of course, as we are right here, of course, the area most likely to be impacted is along the Highway 29 corridor. So, yeah, as we right have Highway 29 going right through here in the Wausau area, the heaviest snow accumulations could be in this area. So, again, this looks like it will be the final blast of winter because Easter Sunday, expecting temperatures around 60. And then as we get into early next week, temperatures will actually get into the 70s. Mid-60s Monday, low 70s Tuesday, mid 70s Wednesday and Thursday. So again, just get through tonight, get through tomorrow. If you have any travel plans later into the evening tonight and early tomorrow morning, please be aware that we could be getting that snow. But again, it's going to get warm. It's going to get nice. And hopefully by the time we celebrate Easter on Sunday, if you're going out with families, doing any travel, any significant distance, it should be a very nice Sunday. We'll get more details on this weather. We'll have a chance to talk to our meteorologist, Ray Miller from weatherology.com, coming up at 3:06 today. So again, it's going to be not a great start to the weekend, but things will get a lot better a lot quicker. And I'm trying to dragging a little bit here today. Yesterday was a very long day. Went to La Crosse, was doing Wausau West baseball yesterday. Wausau West and La Crosse Logan in a doubleheader. First game on BullFallsRadio.com Sports 2 stream. Second game last night right here on Bull Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230. Warriors lost the first game in a heartbreaker 4-3. Came back, won the nightcap 11-8. And with the weather turning better, hopefully we'll be able to get on the field for more consistent baseball and softball coverage starting next week here on Bull Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230. If you missed our broadcast last night of the Warrior Baseball, you can catch them on our podcast page. Go to BullFallsRadio.com, click on sports, and then click on the Wausau West logo, and you'll be able to catch those games that we had yesterday here on Bull Falls Radio. We're going to take a quick timeout and then come back and have our first guest for today, State Representative Katrina Shanklin. Again, State Representative Katrina Shanklin from Stevens Point. We'll be talking to her coming up next. I'm Chad Holmes. The time is 2:12. Glad you could join me here on the Chad Holmes Show on Bull Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230 WXCO. Welcome back. Chad Holmes with you on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, bullfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. 2:15 is the time, 44 degrees under fair skies, and we're very happy to welcome back to the program State Representative Katrina Shanklin from Stevens Point. And Representative, I know start of a holiday weekend, very glad you could spend a few minutes with us.
Thanks so much for having me, and I was loving that intro music. Paula Cole, throwing it back. That was great.
I tell you, that's the second time that I've had that response, because I had the mayor of Wausau, and I'm sure you know the mayor of Wausau, Katie Rosenberg.
Oh, of course. She
said the same thing as I played that.
Well, maybe I should talk to her about trying to get the Lilith Fair in central Wisconsin.
She was mentioning that, too. Exactly right.
No way.
I tell you, she's a big Lilith Fair. Boy, you two are on the same wavelength here. It's very, very true indeed.
Yeah, I mean, the Lilith Fair is my dream. I never got to go, and that is something that I would love to see hosted in central Wisconsin. So I'll have to reach out to Mayor Katie. We'll try to make it happen. Yeah,
I think that would be a very good campaign plank right there. Get votes very, very, very quickly. But speaking of which, we had an election Tuesday, but then right away on Wednesday, there was a state budget meeting. I mean, it was like a public meeting. So nothing ever stops. Everything just keeps going and going and going. Let's talk budget, because obviously, you know, I think we get so caught up in elections, and the process of governing is so very important. And we're in the midst of a very important time with the state budget. We have folks from around the state getting opportunities to speak, legislators listening, hopefully, before they go back and try to put together a state budget and do some, obviously, some negotiating between the Republicans who are in control in the state legislature, and then the governor, of course, and Democrats as well. As we go through this process, what are you looking for? What are you listening to when you're having discussions? What are the priorities right now as we go through this process?
Absolutely. So first of all, I will say I listen to constituents and the experts in the field on these issues, and the number one consensus across not only central Wisconsin, but the state, is that we need to be investing in child care. We have a child care crisis. And the reason why I'm bringing this up right away is because I saw the day after the election on Wednesday, one of the Republican leaders in the legislature said that they wouldn't be funding Governor Evers' child care proposal. And I was knocking doors last weekend and weeks before the election. And as I was knocking doors among constituents, I would knock on doors and talk to people about the election. But because I'm a state legislator, they would also ask me other questions and bring up issues. And I met a gentleman whose wife has two child care facilities in the Stevens Point area. And he brought up proactively that without the funding that the governor launched during the pandemic, they were child care stabilization payments for child care providers, they would have gone under. And that not only affects working families, but it affects all those employers as well. For every one kid that's in that child care facility learning from great early childhood educators, there is also one or two parents who are at their jobs, in the field, in their professions, able to work because of that child care provider. So they're holding up the economy. And, in the way that they strengthen the economy, we need to show that through increases in wages for our early child educators, making child care more affordable for working families with tax credits, helping employers who want to increase access to child care at work, some of whom are actually providing stipends right now to their workers and providing them with tax credits, and then of course increasing that funding to our child care providers to stabilize them through this difficult time. And that is something that I think the legislature needs to focus on if we're going to talk about the workforce shortage. I know next week it seems that Republicans in the legislature are going to be once again going after our state's unemployment system, mm-hmm. and talking about our benefits programs, but what they're not focused on is child care. And Scott Walker's former Secretary of Department of Workforce Development actually said recently that the number one inhibitor to growth in our economy is child care access as well. So all the experts, as well as people from both parties, know that child care should be an issue that we focus on with our $7 billion surplus. I've been disappointed that at least some Republicans in the legislature haven't agreed, but we need to focus on that moving forward in order to continue our state's economic comeback.
Along the same lines, I think maybe connected in a tangential way, I saw a story yesterday in our local newspaper talking about children again being hungry. 1 in 8 Wisconsin kids go hungry, and now after the pandemic moved forward, I would guess the free school meals that were given during pandemic times ended in Wisconsin, and that the governor is looking to add $120 million in his state budget to fund a free breakfast and lunch for all Wisconsin students in public and charter schools. And that Representative Christina Shelton had been working as well to get those free school meals passed in Wisconsin for the last couple of years. What are your thoughts on that issue? Do you think there's any chance that that provision survives the budget process with the Republicans? And would you be in favor of what Representative Shelton has been trying to push forward?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you brought up Representative Christina Shelton from Green Bay, because I was going to give her a shout out too. She's been a champion of this issue. She had a bill last session that would have continued funding for Wisconsin's free healthy school meals. And I was proud to be a co-sponsor. If it's introduced again, I hope it doesn't have to be because it'll pass through the budget, but if it's introduced again, I'll once again co-sponsor it. She has built a coalition of fantastic partners across the state, from farmers to Boys and Girls Clubs to food pantries to social workers and school districts and food banks and organizations. And I think that the governor heard loud and clear as well, and he's always been a champion of our kids. And so when young people have access to free, healthy school meals, they do better in school. We know that the science supports that, but it's also the right thing to do. And so I'm very much hopeful that that will be the case. I saw that it made the front page of the Journal Sentinel today, and I'm glad that there's a spotlight on it. I'm glad that this well-organized coalition will be traveling around the state testifying to the Joint Finance Committee about it. If people agree, please reach out to your legislators as well and encourage them No child should have to go hungry just because somebody in their life who's their adult figure can't afford school meals. And so we need to make sure they get the nutrition they deserve and need to succeed in school and in life. Mm-hmm. And we can do that fairly easily. Once again, we have a $7.1 billion surplus. So it's not that the money isn't there. We need to continue this program because the results are fantastic. But again, it's the right thing to do.
Again, we're talking to Wisconsin State Representative Katrina Shanklin, who represents the 71st Assembly District, serving Portage County in the State Assembly, here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. One other budget question, because I'm kind of girding myself, because the priority of tax cuts for the most wealthy of in our state seems to be a huge priority in terms of using that surplus for Republicans. During this process, when you're talking to folks representing the governor himself, others within the process, how much negotiation, how much give and take is there? Because obviously when the Democrats are in the minority, it's not easy in order to get all the priorities you want through, and that you may have to swallow hard during these negotiations. When you're thinking about it, are there any hard lines that you tried to put out there in terms of what you can support and not support?
I think the hard line for me is knowing, one of the proposals that they put out for a flat tax would cost the state of Wisconsin almost $11 billion. So we'd be running that much of a surplus over a biennium. And I looked up, okay, what is the cost of that? And that tends to match almost exactly the full cost of the UW system, another economic driver in our state. And so when Republicans first introduced that idea of a flat tax, I think some people were looking at it because it sounded good, but what it really does is it's tax relief for the people who can most afford to pay at the top without providing meaningful tax relief for the middle class and working families. And so the governor drew that line in the sand fairly early on in the session, and I appreciate that now they're talking about tax reform as it relates to the middle class. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'll say as related to tax reform. I think that we need to focus on property tax reform because everyone pays property taxes. If you're a renter, you're paying it through your rent, essentially. And if you're a homeowner, of course, you're paying too. And what we have seen in the last few years, as well as over the last decade, is really historic referenda, not just for school funding, but for other government services. Here in Portage County, for our nursing home, we had a referendum twice, actually. And we've also seen communities across Wisconsin, including Marshfield recently, that went to referendum for public safety. And so there have been several dozen referenda in the last year alone on police, fire, and EMS funding. And my position has always been that the state needs to return more of the shared revenue, the taxes that they're collecting, whether it be property taxes, income taxes, sales taxes, back to the local municipalities and counties. That's how the system was originally designed. Those payments have been relatively flat for the last decade. That's irresponsible on our part. We have to restore those funds back and return those funds back to our local government. They should not have to go to a referendum for basic government services like public safety, period, full stop. And so that's the conversation that I'm trying to turn to my colleagues in Madison from both parties about. I'm also asking that we restore a program that I've done a lot of research on. Back in 2003, it ended, and it was a separate shared revenue payment to municipalities of populations below 5,000. And I'm interested in figuring out how we can ensure more rural, less resourced towns and villages across Wisconsin, many of which make up my district. My district is mostly rural, small towns and villages, get that support. Because if they get a flat, percentage increase from the state and their budgets are just $200,000, that doesn't impact them nearly as much as looking at it from an equitable way. And the way that I describe this to lawmakers is when you look at school funding, which also needs work, but at least has some equity built into it, we don't just rely on property taxes. Of course not. In rural districts that are primarily composed of agricultural land, which is taxed at a different rate than other land, there's no way you could keep the lights on for a sparsely populated school district. But of course, everyone agrees we need to have school districts in those areas, of course, for schools, for kids' access to those schools. So they get sparsity aid payments for their low population or sparse population. They also get high cost transportation aid because of the cost to bus kids at a larger mileage, square mileage district, of course. So we need to be looking at similar things for shared revenue. And that's something that I've been pitching to my colleagues across the aisle.
And in our last few minutes, I wanted to talk to you about, because I was, you know, when I was getting ready to talk to you, I was looking at what you've been working on. And you've been working on quite a bit in terms of potential legislation in Madison. But a couple of areas that I wanted to talk about is clean water. And it's been such a big issue right now, water quality. And I just saw this week that Senator Tammy Baldwin is delivering big time for the state in terms of clean water. And I know that you have a couple of bills that are working its way rather quickly in the legislature. Could you talk about that?
Absolutely. I'm very excited about this. So I've been working on water quality issues for years and years because in my county, Portage County, relatively many people, I would say about 25%, one in four with private wells, cannot drink water from their taps. Now, that's changing. I'm working on that. I helped them get $10 million. Everyone in the state has access to this $10 million program to repair, replace, reconstruct their private contaminated wells or treat their water. But in addition, I've been working on some other things. So I'm a big champion of producer-led watershed grants. This is a group of farmers in one watershed that works together to protect their water from contaminants like phosphorus, nitrate, pesticides, and others, as well as working on best practices in conservation. And they participate in a lot of different events with the community and educate the community as well. And so in the central Wisconsin area, I would say three that people should know about are EPIC, Farmers of the Mill Creek Watershed, and Farmers for Tomorrow. And those three, I've been to all three events that they've held locally. And what they do is they teach farmers about how to protect the land and water, including best practices for weed control. For example, I just went to Farmers for Tomorrow last week and they brought in some professors from UW-Madison to teach them about weed control. Hmm. So we have a bill, it's a bipartisan, and it's getting a vote next week in both houses to allow farmers that live outside of the watershed but in an adjacent watershed to join. That's important because every single farm demo day I've been to for these producer-led watershed groups, there's always at least one farmer who shows up and says, I wish I could be a part of your watershed. They live just a mile away and they're out of the watershed. So we recognize the benefit of including more people in these programs. Under this program, they get support from the state, usually grants between $25,000 and $40,000 from DATCAP, and they can use it for cover crops, for some hard practices like buffer strips, and many other things, no-till, and we have different incentives for different things, and each producer-led watershed group has different incentives. So you'll have to contact your local producer-led group if you're hearing this and are interested. But, for example, in Marathon County, you're a new farmer that's interested in joining EPIC, there's a new incentive for you specifically, so contact Marathon County Conservation Department about that. So anyway, that's one part of the bill. The second part of the bill is because our farmers are working together across this watershed to protect that surface water, we believe that they should have access to the DNR surface water grants. So we have both lake and river protection grants that can be used for a multitude of things. One would be, for example, you have a Eurasian milfoil problem, water milfoil problem, and you want to get a grant to help remove that invasive species. This could help. So producer-led watershed groups are instrumental in protecting our land and water, and this bill, when passed, because I think it'll pass both the Senate and Assembly Committee next week, knock on wood, will do those things and increase not only advocacy, but protection and work across watersheds, and farmers really can be part of the solution in a thoughtful way. So that's one bill. Let me know if I have time for the other.
Yeah, no, I'm making the time for you.
Okay, well, sounds good, because otherwise I can wait if you need to go to commercial.
No, actually, we can actually keep on going, because I have a little flexibility here this today for once. I figured out the system. But no, you
sounds great.
Absolutely,
yeah.
We'd love to hear
when
about the other bill.
Perfect. When it comes to me and water, I can talk for hours. So that's always the issue that I have, is how do I make this short? Okay, so second piece of this. We know that there are people across the state, including in my district, who can't drink water from their taps. And we know that we need to invest in long-term prevention. I think the previous bill is a great example of long-term prevention working together. So this bill is going to support more people replacing and repairing their private contaminated wells. The grant program that I helped launch with the DNR and governor in October, that $10 million program, will expire in a couple years when the money runs out. I encourage people to apply right now if they can. They can go on the DNR's website and type in well compensation grant program, and they will get support if they are between, or if their household income or business income is below $100,000 and they need to repair, replace, treat, et cetera, their well from their household or business. They can get that right now. When that money runs out, that will no longer be true and all the criteria will change. This is my eighth legislative try at changing this. I've tried through multiple budgets. I've tried as standalone bipartisan bills over and over and over. And we're really hoping that this time around we're going to get it done. We had a hearing in the Agriculture Committee just the other day, and we had a hearing in the Senate committee 2 weeks ago. So I'm hopeful we're going to get this bill passed. But this bill is called Assembly Bill 64. Environmental and agricultural groups are in strong support of it. We're opening up the state statutes that haven't been updated in years so that people can finally qualify for nitrate contamination to repair or replace or reconstruct their contaminated private well. So trying to get that one across the finish line. And once that's done, I have a host of other things to work on, including private well testing programs for local governments and so much more. So those are two bills I'm really excited about that had hearings and have bipartisan support. And I'm hopeful that in the next few months, we can get them across the finish line to the governor's desk so they can become law.
And to wrap it up, I was looking at the links to those bills. And you said it, bipartisan. And I think it's important to let folks know that government can work to do things that make people's lives better. And it can be done in a bipartisan way. And I saw some of the names on there that kind of, you know, surprised me. I saw the state representative from this area here in Marathon County on that, in the list of names. So it does look like it truly is a bipartisan effort going on with those bills.
Absolutely. And speaking of Marathon County, I was just at an EPIC, the farmer, you know, the producer-led group annual meeting where there were two other legislators there from across the aisle. And we were talking about their new bill that will help more farmers in Marathon County reduce phosphorus into the Fenwood Creek. And that's just one more example. I'm on that bill. We talked about it. We're working together. Those don't get the same number of clicks when their articles posted online, right? And I think that's what sometimes drives the division is the politics of outrage. And that's not to minimize what's happening. If you look at what's happening in Tennessee, for example, and if we think about our state's 1849 law, people are outraged and that's real, but that doesn't mean that I can't work with my colleagues on issues that we believe in and can work on together. And our constituents unanimously almost agree on, whether it's access to clean water, making sure that we're expanding broadband, funding our roads and schools, and ensuring that at the end of the day, hopefully we can get some more money for childcare. So I'm going to say that's bipartisan. Mm-hmm. And the next time I'm back, I'll report back on that. But that's the big one that I think, look, we're going to talk about the workforce shortage. Fund childcare first. We shouldn't be touching anything else on the state level until we do. So I'll be watching the budget committee closely on that one.
Well, State Representative Katrina Shanklin, 71st Assembly District. Again, a pleasure to talk to you. Have a great weekend, and we do look forward to having you back on very, very soon.
Sounds good. I hope to be back soon, too. Thanks so much for your time, and have a great weekend.
Absolutely. Again, great to talk to Representative Shanklin. We're going to take a quick time out. The time is 2:36. More to come here on this Friday afternoon. I'm Chad Holmes on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 12:30. Holmes back with you on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 12:30, BowFallsRadio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO. Again, thanks to 71st Assembly District Representative Katrina Shanklin for joining us to talked a little bit yesterday about the difference between workhorses and show horses. And I was talking about the difference between Senator Tammy Baldwin and Senator Ron Johnson. It feels like Ron Johnson's more of a show horse, not working on the issues that really make a difference in the day-to-day lives of Wisconsinites, as opposed to Tammy Baldwin. When I spoke about the really nice work she has done in terms of the water issue, that is so vitally important in our area and in our state. And I think you can say as well that State Representative Katrina Shankland is one of those workhorses as well. And it's not easy. It's not easy when you are a part of a rather large minority to still be able to get things done. And we've seen that with Senator Baldwin. When she's in the minority, she gets more done than Senator Johnson does when he's in the majority. And you see here, and I was going over, I was looking at what Representative Shankland has been working on in terms of her bills in Madison. No, I mean, if you go to her site, I mean, boy, boom, 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 working on all sorts of different issues. And it was great to hear the passion about making government work and working across the aisle. And, the two bills she was talking about, I took a look at it. I was looking at the people that were also co-sponsors, and I saw Representative Pat Snyder on there. And obviously, we disagree with Representative Snyder in a lot of ways, but at the same time, you give credit where credit is due in the fact that he's working along with State Representative Katrina Shankland in terms of getting something done for the people of this area and this part of the state is worthy of acknowledgement. So, again, it's always great to talk to State Representative Katrina Shankland here on this program on Bull Falls Radio 98.9. And also, she mentioned at the very end, there's reasons as well to be upset about things. And I think what's happening in Tennessee is a disgrace, an absolute disgrace, that a supermajority of Republicans is ejecting Democrats for making an issue of guns after children in an elementary school were killed in Tennessee. Unbelievable. But the thing is, it's not going to work. But also the reason I mentioned it as well is the state of Wisconsin has a situation where Republicans in the state Senate after Tuesday night have a supermajority. We've heard about the rumbles of impeachment and other actions against the minority and the idea that, well, they won't do it here. If they can do it here, they will do it here if they can get away with it. And we'll see whether or not the Tennessee Republicans have bit off more than they can chew, because you got Justin Jones and Justin Pearson who were taken out of the Tennessee House, expelled. And here's Justin Pearson on the floor yesterday. I wanted to play this because this man is very impressive. Here's what Justin Pearson had to say when this was before the vote yesterday on the floor of the Tennessee House. Here's what Justin Pearson had to say.
Yes, I tell you, it was a sad day on Saturday. All hope seemed to be lost. Representatives were thrown out of the state house. Democracy seemed to be at its end. Seemed like the NRA and gun lobbyists might win. But oh, that was good news for us. I don't know how long this Saturday in the state of Tennessee might last. But oh, we have good news, folks. We've got good news that Sunday always comes. Resurrection is a promise. And it is a prophecy. It's a prophecy that came out of the cotton fields. It's a prophecy that came out of the lynching tree. It's a prophecy that still lives in each and every one of us in order to make the state of Tennessee the place that it ought to be. And so I've still got hope because I know we are still here and we will never quit.
We're voting on House Resolution 63. All those in favor?
And then they voted him out. Out of order. Out of order. Ha. Justin Pearson and Justin Jones are African Americans. There was a third state legislator that was also voted on for expulsion. A white female. and they did not vote her out. The idea that racism is dead in America is such a lie. If this is not another example of it, I don't know what to tell you. Because, again, we have a situation where an overwhelming majority is using their power to try and crush the minority. And we've seen the word fascism thrown around a lot recently. And I don't think it's unfair to throw that term around. It is a scary time. And again, the idea that because Devin LeMahieu said, well, we're not going to impeach Judge Janet Protasiewicz after she just won a statewide election by more than 10 points, should not make us relax. Because again, the idea that the supermajority of Republicans in the Wisconsin state legislature won't use their power is a bit of a fantasy. Have to be very aware of what can happen. Have to take another quick break, but we'll come right back. Coming up on 2:48, it is Good Friday, and I'm glad you could spend part of your Good Friday with me. I'm Chad Holmes. More to come here on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230 WXCO. Chad Holmes with you on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, bullfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO. The time is 2:51. Before we leave, at least for now, because I'm sure I'll have more to say as time moves forward about this situation in Tennessee, and again, the scary power of a supermajority that Republicans have, not only in Tennessee, but here in the state of Wisconsin. We heard some comments from Justin Pearson, very powerful orator on the floor of the Tennessee House just before he was expelled from that body. The other state representative in Tennessee, Representative Justin Jones, made a very good point as well, calling out the GOP for not expelling a child molester and a member guilty of domestic violence, but expelling himself and Justin Pearson. Here's what Justin Jones said in terms of the unfairness of it.
We called for you all to ban assault weapons, and you respond with an assault on democracy. For years, one of your colleagues who was an admitted child molester sat in this chamber, no expulsion. One member sits in this chamber who was found guilty of domestic violence, no expulsion. We had a member pee in another member's chair in this chamber, no expulsion. Since you're trying to put us on trial, I'll say what you're really putting on trial is the state of Tennessee. A state in which the Ku Klux Klan was founded is now attempting another power grab by silencing the two youngest black representatives and one of the only women, Democratic women, in this body. It is in that spirit of speaking for my constituents, of being a representative of the people, that I approached this well on last Thursday, breaking a House rule, but exercising moral obedience to my constitutional responsibility to be a voice for my people, to be a voice for the Tennesseans who you choose not to listen to because of those NRA checks. For so long, this body, drunk with power, has modeled for the world what we know as nothing less than authoritarianism. And today is the climax of that behavior. But you will not be victorious, because there are generations of young people who see what is going on. There are young people that, as you try and beat us down, they are rising up to take back the state. That is why the nation is watching you today.
Talk about two incredibly impressive people in Justin Jones and Justin Pearson, from what we heard in those clips in the last few minutes. And one thing that makes me really excited about the future, because there are times when I hear politicians talk, I've never been more optimistic about the future of America, I kind of shake my head. I know that in a sense you almost have to say that, because, boy, if you say anything that doesn't make America out to be the shining beacon for the entire world, it's used against you. I mean, you go back to Jimmy Carter's administration and look up the Malaise speech. They call it the Malaise speech. Jimmy Carter never used the term Malaise. But I was a child living through that era, and it was a tough time in America. And the president, Jimmy Carter, was trying to point out to the people that he felt the pain, and he also knew that we would get through it, but also acknowledging the tough times that we were going through, not ignoring the tough times. So again, there are times where I don't think I'm optimistic about the future of this country. I'm not optimistic that for the rest of my life that we're going to see things get much, much better. I got very depressed during the Trump era because it felt like, boy, any progress that we made in the previous 8 years was being flushed down the toilet, because after an outstanding administration of Barack Obama, somehow the United States of America, through its electoral system, elected the complete opposite of what we had just had. But what does make me excited, what makes me optimistic about the future, are listening to those two young men. As Justin Pearson, Justin Jones just said, the two youngest black members of that body. And also, we had Representative Katrina Shanklin on earlier, one of the youngest members of our state legislature in Wisconsin. We have a very young mayor here in Wausau, in Mayor Rosenberg. We have lots of young people that are going to get involved in our elected government and lead us out of some of these troubles. Because right now we are in an era where we do have a lot of older people serving us. If you look at the United States Senate, I mean, it is getting a little scary. And as much great work as the president has done, I hope Democrats start to look to the future in other areas as well. We need to find the leaders for the next generation. We need to find the energy and the spirit and those who know what young people are going through and what young people need in the future. When you listen to Justin Jones and Justin Pearson and Katrina Shanklin and Katie Rosenberg and other younger politicians, there is reason for optimism. And there's also reason for optimism when you see young people starting to take control of their own destiny by protesting. And the thing about throwing Jones and Pearson out of the Tennessee House for protesting, this country was based on protesting. It started with protest. We're coming up on the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. July 4th, 2026 is not that far off. Just over 3 years away, we'll be celebrating, I hope, celebrating our 250th anniversary from the Declaration. I truly think that it will be the younger generation of leaders that will have the ability to try and pull us out from Trumpism and fascism and the other isms that are creeping into our country in recent years. Coming up at 3 o'clock, we're going to find out what's going on around the country and around the world. CBS News at the top of the hour. Then at 3:06, we'll talk to Ray Miller, our meteorologist from weatherology.com. Again, here in Marathon County in the Wausau area, there is a winter weather advisory that will go into effect at 9 p.m. this evening until 9 a.m. tomorrow. Some snow expected anywhere between 2 and upwards of 8 inches possible. And we'll get more details with Ray Miller coming up at 3:06. And again, after the winter weather advisory ends at 9 a.m. Saturday, things will start to turn around with much warmer weather starting on Easter Sunday and then going into next week. So all the details coming up at 3:06. Also coming up in the next hour, we'll have our weekly Wisconsin sports segment. I'll be joined by Newman Catholic Championship football coach and all-around Wisconsin sports fan Paul Mickley. We'll talk about the Bucks, the Brewers, the Packers, the Badgers, and a whole bunch more. That's all coming up here on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230.